So first, I apologize if my talk is going to be too simple. I don't know. So the so what I want to present here is a project I'm working on with Andrea Banfi and Gavin Salam. And the aim of the project was to find a way to automate the resummation of infrared locks appearing generally in distributions of finite state observables in QCD. So first, what do we mean by finite state observables? Generally, what we want to resum are event shapes or jet rates. And these are infrared and collinear safe observables, which describe the topology of the final state. So the most known example is, for instance, the thrust. To compute the thrust, you compute the projection of momenta along all possible directions, and you define the thrust axis as the axis which maximizes this projection of momenta. And then what happens is that if you have two jet-like events like this one, the value of t is very close to 1, or generally you look at 1 minus t, which is very small, while planar or spherical events are characterized by a value of t of the order of 1, but far away from 1. So that the value of these observables really gives you some information about the energy and momentum flow of the final state. And this is also very typical. These observables are defined always in such a way that when they vanish, you are approaching the Born limit. So why do we study these observables? Well, they are a good compromise between being simple enough that you really can make good predictions. That is, you can really compute many terms of the perturbative expansion, fixed order and resummed. But also they are very sensitive to properties of QCD radiation. So generally they do provide a lot of information. For instance, they're used to measure alpha and the running of alpha, to test the gauge group of QCD, that is to measure the color factors, and also, most interesting, I think, to study the connection between parton level and hadron level. So this is, for instance, here the perturbative predictions, and this is what happens once you compute the non-perturbative corrections. So, as I was saying, this is quite general. These observables are defined in such a way that when you're studying them in the region where they are small, you're approaching the Born limit. And this means that you are forbidding additional gluon emissions. So this has this unequal effect on real and virtual emissions. So for instance, of course, you need to forbid the presence of an additional jet. You need to put some limits on these soft and collinear emissions. That is, you have some phase space integral, but they are bounded by the value of the observable, really. Well, of course, you don't do anything on virtual emissions. So, well, when you sum things together, and if you look at, for instance, the probability that your observable is less than a fixed value v, what happens is that for every power of alpha, you get these two logs. And these are really due to the energy and angular integral. So these terms, I mean, if v is small, these terms are of order one, and you want to resum. You need to resum these terms. So how do you do these resummations? Well, the basic idea behind these resummations is factorization. So first, you need to factorize the matrix element in the phase space. And okay, as was saying, basically, what in principle, you have a very complicated matrix element with many gluons. And in principle, also gluon branchings, of course. But you can exploit this property of QCD radiation, and you can replace this by just independent emissions from the hard partons, so that you get a factorized structure. And then, well, you need to factorize the observable you are really computing. So for instance, here, if you want to resum the thrust, you write this, the thrust in terms of these soft variables, energy and angle. And then you just introduce a Mellin integral. That is, you go to conjugate space. And what happens is that this term here becomes a product here. So you really see you can reconstruct an exponential, which is written here. So this is basically the resumed answer for the thrust. You see you have, okay, this is the Mellin integral, and then you just have a simple exponential. And okay, this is basically the function U in Penner-Stoke, which depends really on the observable, and this is the virtual subtraction. So this is infrared finite. So this is really, in principle, very simple. But of course, there are a bit of subtleties. For instance, you need to account for the correct argument of alpha, and you need to account for hard collinear splittings, and so on. So, and also, I mean, what happens if you want to resum a different observable? Well, the first part is quite really the same. And what really changes is this part, where you analyze your observable and where you introduce the Mellin integrals. The trust is really simple, because it's just given by a sum of contributions. If you have a different observable, generally, you have to introduce more than one Mellin integral. So this is what makes these resummations more non-trivial. So this is a selection of some of these next two leading log resum predictions done in the last years. So you really see that there are a lot of different calculations have been done. And the average is that you have one observable per paper. So sometimes you find, like here you find the light jet mass and the narrow jet broadening, so two observables in one paper. But also sometimes you see the broadening and the broadening again. Basically because the first one did contain a mistake, a non-trivial mistake. So if you look in more detail, and you count the number of papers we actually do contain a mistake, you see that it is roughly 30%, which is really amazingly high. So it's clear that there is a need to automate this business. And this was the aim of our project, so to write a code which is really able to resum this observable at the next reading log accuracy in an automated way. So really sort of what you have for fixed order predictions. So that you define the process and the number of jets, and you define the observable you want to compute, and then you just run the program. So how did we do this? Well, everything is sort of based on this master formula. And okay, this is our integrated distribution we want to compute. At next leading log accuracy, well, this is just a phase space integral, whatever, but this is just a product of two factors. So the first one is constructed in such a way that it will contain all double logs and most of the single logs. But it is simple enough that in principle you could compute it analytically. So well, it has all dependence on soft and collinear emissions. It takes into account hard collinear splittings. And this generally simply changed the scale of the parton densities. And there is also soft factor, soft emissions at large angles. So this is quite a typical structure. And then you have a non-trivial factor here, which really contains all the non-trivial dependence on the observable. And this is computed numerically. So I will now explain really what is this and what is the second case. So, well. To compute this sort of simpler distribution, the idea is to define an observable which has the same double logs as the observable you want to study, but which factorizes in a simple way. Simple way means you don't need to introduce any Mellin integral to factorize it. So, for instance, if you have whatever observable, let's say the broadening, the sum of transverse momenta, you define a simple broadening, which is just the biggest transverse momentum. It is then clear that if you have a theta function here, it becomes a product of theta functions. So you don't need any Mellin integral, nothing. And then the resummation is really sort of automatic in a way. So how do you resum then this observable? Well, what we do is the following. This observable is sensitive only to one emission. So we fix a Born event, and we simulate the emission of one gluon. And then, we assume that we can parameterize the observable in this way, where here kT is the transverse momentum, rapidity, and azimuthal angle. Then we check whether this is correct, and if the parameterization is correct, our program can determine these coefficients and this function. And given these numbers, then you can compute this simple distribution in principle, just applying a formula. So, well, you could do it analytically, but... Okay, and then, what's missing? Of course, you need to take into account the difference between these two observables. So this is really how basically all emissions together affect the value of the full observable. And this includes all sort of recoil effects. And we call this multiple emission effects. And okay, this is really the sort of the most difficult part. But okay, we define this function f, which encodes this information of how all emissions together affect the observable. And this function is defined in such a way that, well, if the simple observable and the full one are really the same, the function f is trivially equal to 1. And this happens in some cases. If the observable is simply additive, like the thrust, this is what you get from evaluating just one Mellin integral. And in general, we compute this function doing a Monte Carlo, well, generating events with a particular probability distribution. But the important point is that this function is a function of R prime, where R prime is the derivative of the double log exponent. So R prime is a pure single log function. So this function is, by construction, a pure single log function. So, well, of course, all this does not apply to all possible observables in QCD, no? But there is a precise list of requirements which the observable should fulfill. So, for instance, well, as I was saying, it should vanish in the bound limit, and it should be positive defined. We did assume this parameterization for the observable. It should be infrared and collinear safe. It should be global and continuously global, okay? And it should exponentiate. So this might seem to be really a long list, but practically the limiting condition is this, the requirement of globalness. That is, that it really depends, well, as Pino was saying there. While all other conditions are really satisfied by all observables which have been resumed so far. But also, the important thing is that before resumming any observable, our program is able to test automatically all these conditions, so that you really resum the observable only if you can guarantee that you have the correct answer. Okay, since I think it's quite interesting, I want to say just two words about this exponentiation. So we know that some observables have these exponentiating double logs. And this means that basically once you know this coefficient, you can compute, you know the coefficient of all double logs, and also single logs sometimes. But some observables do not. For instance, the JADE, it's well known, and it's really due to this factor here. And you know it because you did an explicit calculation, basically. So for the JADE, no one really knows how to resum these double logs. So no way you can resum single logs. And therefore, it's really important that any automated procedure is able to get to check exponentiation. So this is the name of our program, which is called CSAR. And okay, the status is that currently it's limited to global observables. And we tested it against basically all known resummations done so far. And okay, it can be applied to this following list of processes. Here there were already some resummations before, while in hadronic digest productions there were no resummations. So I will present some results here. So, hadronic digest production, well, you have two incoming hadrons which produce two jets in the final state. So first, well, you know that experimentally you can't make measurements along the beam. So this is a problem because you explicitly require your observable to be global. So there are two solutions to this. One, most simple one, is to, well, you take eta zero as large as possible. That is, you measure as much as you can. You define some observables, for instance, a transverse thrust. That is, you look at the transverse plane and you measure the thrust, or a thrust minor, which is basically the radiation out of this plane, the plane containing the four partons. And then predictions, you can make predictions, and they are really formally valid as long as this relation holds. So the bigger it is, the better it is. That is, the more far away you can really make predictions. And then, well, there is a more interesting solution, I think, which is this one. You define some so-called indirectly global observables, which, well, for instance, you want to define an indirectly global thrust. You take the thrust definition and you add an additional term, which is basically the sum of all transverse momenta in the region where you are looking at, so in this region here. So what happens basically is that since the sum of all PTs has to vanish, if you have an emission in this region here, the sum of the PTs outside will be non-zero. So even if you're not looking in this region, you are indirectly sensitive to emissions there. And this guarantees that the observable is global, and then you can make predictions. Well, one problem is that, okay, you can make predictions, but our function f, which describes these multiple emission effects, will diverge. And the reason is the following. Usually, these observables are small because you're vetoing radiation, so you have a double log Sudakov effect. What happens here is that you can have emissions with big transverse momenta, but you can have a cancellation. So according to the region of phase space, one or the other mechanism is more likely. But still, okay, we'll show some predictions. There is a safe region where you can make predictions. So this is now the, well, I'm looking now at this observable, the indirectly global thrust minor, so this sort of out-of-plane radiation. So our program basically first performs a number of tests on the observable, and then determines this single emission property. So this is the dependence on KT, rapidity, this is the azimuthal dependence, and the normalization. And this is the plot of the azimuthal dependence. Then the program determines this multiple emission function, which is different for different color configurations. And for instance, here you see the effect of the divergence. And okay, this one is basically gluon-gluon going to QQ bar. So you are much more sensitive to radiation from the two incoming legs, and therefore you have a divergence much more earlier. While this one is QQ bar to gluon-gluon. So you are almost not sensitive to the two incoming ones. And then you put things together and you get the resumed answer. So this is the resumed prediction for different subprocesses at the tevatron. This is basically just a sample distribution. So, okay, before concluding, this is basically what is in our code. So these are the processes which are currently implemented. And one important thing is we try to always use analytical results if possible, and this improves the quality of predictions. To generate all these emissions, you need to account for the recoil, and we use the dipole method. Then, okay, you need to account for soft radiation at large angle, and we do it with the in hadronic collisions following Sternmann's formalism. We need to account for the evolution of the scale of the PDF, so there is a PDF evolution code. And most of the tests really require to take almost asymptotic limits, and so we need to use arbitrary precision to do this. Conclude. So, okay, well, I conclude saying that in the less inclusive phase space region, you need to make some predictions. And the main result of this project is that now we have a procedure to really perform these resummations automatically. Well, I think the most interesting application, the most, well, from an experimental point of view, I think it's to have predictions for hadronic digest production. And theoretically, I think it's, well, having a condition to test exponentiation, I think it's really important. Work in progress is the release of the first version of this. And well, in the to-do list, what we'll have to do is to do the matching of resumed and fixed order, to do it automatically. And the wish list includes extension to non-global observables and inclusion of mass effects.
Questions? I do have a question that you show this distribution at the end for the two jet production. So I should compare that with at least in some region or at the end of your distribution with the three jet calculations of living water or next living water or ocean. So what important here is this figure, the impact on quantity.
This is four. You have two hard going into two hard. So this is four.
So the three quantum level in the final state you don't get the attenuation.
No. Three in the final state, no.
No, you need four quantum in the final state. I see. So but the full three level matrix element is known in this case, right? So my question is that what is the difference in behavior if you would just make naive analysis calculation?
If you
diverge at some point,
it would diverge in some point. On
and
the other hand,
then you would start to match the Hunter sample.
Well, this I don't really know. You see,
because that's interesting to know.
Huh?
It's interesting to know.
It's interesting to know. Well, our sample predictions here become negative, which is meaningless. So in this region, you would have to correct it with fixed order. Well, of course. Fixed order prediction would not reproduce the peak, the Sudakov peak. So, but I can't really tell where they would.
Do you have something where you need the string pattern in the living order, like transfer trust, for example? If you could put transfer trust.
It's really similar.
No, but
two incoming and two outgoing, or what?
I'm talking about the outgoing.
Outgoing, three.
For transfer trust is enough.
Two. Two is enough.
Then you get peak for one.
Okay, two jets plus soft radiation. This is what I mean when I say two.
Right?
Okay. Right.
Leading order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, then transverse thrust is basically.
Quartons plus.
Yeah. Okay.
I have always one more quarton.
Then, yes. I say this is two. Two born plus soft. So
right.
This is, and the transverse thrust, well, it
so
looks really quite the same.
This
is thrust minor, but the plots
thrust
will.
Minor two. Yeah, sure. Okay.
I guess I'm not quite understanding what global means, and that seems to be a key thing.
Ah, okay,
so
global.
Let me state what I thought I understood, and then you tell me how wrong it is. It means that it's a good thing to be global, and that means that you're not putting any cuts on which partons or particles count in the distributions. More or
less
right?
It's a.
Bohr level. That's correct at the Bohr level?
Yeah.
What about at a higher level?
So, okay. Global means basically sensitive to emissions everywhere. And non-global, if you look at E plus E minus to two jets, and you look only in one hemisphere, then you're not sensitive to emissions in the other one, that's non-global.
Okay.
And the problem you have with non-global observable is this one. Well, maybe I can make a picture. So usually you do this approximation here, and this is why where you can resum. If you do the same, and you look at something like this, you have a glue. Well, in principle, generally in QCD, you have these diagrams, right? You would have a gluon.
We
can
have the lights on the board. Maybe we should switch out the lights, right? It must be there's some lights on here.
Yeah,
this
one. So, okay. So in QCD, typically, you have these diagrams, a gluon emitting another gluon, right? So you want it to be important that you are logarithmic order. So if these gluons are at large angle, they have to be energy ordered. So something like this. Otherwise, I mean, it's not important. So this is 2, 1. And then generally, for every real emission diagram, you have the corresponding virtual one, which is like this. Since E1 is much bigger than E2, if you sum this together, this is positive, negative, they cancel. And then you can just neglect these things. So this is what happens for global observables. Because basically, they both are determined roughly by the first emission. So you can neglect it all together. And then you make this nice approximation. While for non-global, what happens is that this can go here. And if you're looking only in this hemisphere here, this affects directly your observable, while this does not. So you spoil this real virtual cancellation. And then in principle, here you have whatever complicated structure which emits in the region you're looking at. And it means, well, you can't do this this approximation here anymore. So basically, you cannot resum. This is the big problem. This answers the question? Okay.
So in principle, could you, there are some of these observables that you can resum, but you cannot exponentiate. Like E plus E minus to four jets in the Durham algorithm, I think is an example of that. So,
The Durham exponentiates. The Durham exponentiates.
Yeah, for four jets?
For any.
The J
does not exponentiate.
Maybe it's a sum of different terms, each of which. Is that it?
Mm-hmm. Say again.
I thought there were some jet observables that.
What you call exponentiate is
anyway, that's something that could be in principle handled by the program that you haven't.
Well, I don't know what you call an exponentiating.
Well, the observable is not the exponential of a single factor. But I think
at double log, well, if it's not, then I mean, you can't resum it if it's not. I mean. At single log.
Well, there's a formula by, I don't know, did you write this down? Trying to do a Katani for the resum four jet cross section. Okay. I mean, it's a sum of different terms. It's, maybe it's still considered to be
the multi-jet.
Right.
Then you start trading for me. There's a problem of color.
Mm-hmm. So, if somebody invents an observable, how do you test it?
How do we test exponentiation? Mm-hmm. It's a, well, basically, the way we do it is we look at how our function f is defined, this strange function, and we impose that it must be well defined for the observable to exponentiate. And it's, the conditions are, two conditions, which are generalization of being usually infrared safe, but it's a stronger requirement. So I can.
So if you're adjusting the G algorithm, you could hang out immediately without the explicit calculation.
Yes.
Wrong and Sterling, that is
math. Yes. For instance, the conditions.
How you see immediately that?
No, I don't see immediately. I run the program and he tells me. No, but I mean, it's really, for instance, you know, you compute higher moments usually of these observables and they exponentiate. But for instance, it turns out if you do a product of thrust times broadening, it does not exponentiate. And then you think why and then you understand it. But it's quite a useful. The conditions, I can tell you what the conditions are. It's a bit. I don't know how. It's a bit technical.
Yeah. So how automatic is it? I mean, do you have sort of observables in there that you've looked at and then that you've done some analytic studies of, or could I just take any crazy observable and tell your the system mm-hmm. to do it in some way, and then the program would just automatically do everything?
No, the program is defined in such a way that it has a part where you're supposed to put in your routine. And then you just run it. So of course we have all our routines and things,
so
but
put
it's
your observable definition as
yes.
a routine and then it figures uh-huh. everything out.
So you had a shown and click right now.
Yep.
And that's
First, well, this is a bit cryptical. for instance, you want to assume the thrust in the two jet limit. You need to tell me the number of jets. And I tell you if the resummation is meaningful in this number of jet limits. So the observable should vanish approaching the two jet limit. So this is the first one. Then it should be positive defined, the observable, should be, well, this global, as we were saying, and there is a stronger requirement, which is, I didn't really say it, continuously global. This means that the dependence on KT should be the same in all phase space, and this is to really be able to resume large angle emissions. So there is this. Then, for instance, we test the additivity. So if the observable is additive, like the thrust, we don't compute any multiple emission effects because we know the analytical answer. So this one is not, and so we just compute numerically the function. And then, okay, so these two are more technical again, and the exponentiation. So this is the first part, and then computing.
How do you test the exponentiation?
Okay, I can tell you here or later?
Maybe here.
Now. Okay. Infrared safe first. How do you define an observable to be infrared safe? Usually you take the limit where the emission goes to zero and the observable should not change. So maybe right here. So infrared safe for us means this. Here safe means so you take the limit where the value of the observable for the additional emission goes to zero, and then you want the observable with your m plus one emission, this must be equal to the value of the observable without. This is normal infrared and collinear safe. This is what happens. So that if the observable, the additional emission does not contribute alone, then it does not contribute to the whole. Then we define this thing, which is recursive infrared collinear safe, which is the following. You take this limit. That is, now I say what this means. So you take the limit where the value of all values go to zero, all emissions basically go to zero, but the ratio is fixed. So VE over V1 is fixed. And then it must happen that the value for the full observable over the value determined by the first observable is again well defined. So if this limit is not well defined, then the observable does not exponentiate. And then there is an additional condition, which is after taking this limit, you add an additional emission, which is much smaller than all the other ones, and the limit should remain the same. So it's technically a bit,
How do you do to fix the normalization of the distribution at the end? I mean, are you able to include corrections due to a one-loop contribution, for instance?
One-loop exact, huh? Yeah. No, this...
No, sorry, but I mean, if you work in many space, you can account for all the logs, log square and single log.
I don't
work... The constant then in many space?
No, no. I don't work in many space.
Okay,
this is...
If you wanted to work in many space, usually... You get that your result for exponentiation is a sum of form factor times the coefficient which is constant. Oh. And this coefficient includes the one-loop correction.
This is what, matching, exactly. So, no, why not? I mean, this is fixed by fixed.
It's not only matching.
Well, once you define.
Normalization is very some expression also. If you expand that, you can get the matching.
How you fix the normalization,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, but probably you have fixed overlap terms. Normally you have them analytically, here you don't.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good question, because this is the advantage of doing analytical calculations, that you can handle all these terms, and you can go up to next window. So I wonder how you could do that in an automatic way.
To go beyond or to fix the normalization?
No, to fix the normalization.
No, to fix the normalization, with simple matching you can do it, I think. I don't...
Yeah.
maybe.
You can get those, you should get those out of the fixed order tab.
Right.
So, I mean,
So you have some, you do the matching numerically.
We didn't do it yet, but no, I mean, we did it in simpler processes, but not in hadronic collisions. But
so the problem, I think, is if the resummation becomes numerical and the automated one loop calculations become numerical, then the matching again gets a little trickier because you never see a log on either side to cancel it out.
But you calculate control. The higher logs.
Yeah, okay, exactly. This is so the way the answer here is constructed, it's numerical, but still there are no subleading things. So this function f is contains only single logs. And so there are no subleading logs. So once you want to match in principle, it should be straightforward because. So this is, I mean, you don't need to subtract any sub-subleading thing, so.
Okay, so then, you need to more get the address now by Johannes and Sven.
I think it's,